This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Has there ever been a critter that brought immeasurable joy to your world? One with fur, perhaps, or feathers, or scales, or even fins? Have you ever had to grieve for the loss of that friend? To that last question, some will say, grieve? What, are you kidding? It was just a dumb animal. For others, the response could be, oh gosh, yes. In fact, I'm tearing up just thinking about it now. It turns out that how we respond to the loss of a pet can say a lot about us, and how we respond to others' response can say something, too. Knowing how to deal with loss better might just be something all of us can use, especially if we've ever reacted to someone else's grief by thinking, oh, why don't they just get over it? Many of us don't understand why people respond to the loss of an animal the way they do, but I'm certain we will understand much more after hearing from the expert guests who will be with us right after the news.
Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. 888-WMRA-TALK, the easy way to remember our call-in number. Whether you've got tears to share or a happy story to tell about the memory of a beloved animal, we want to hear from you this hour as we explore the intersection between grief, loss, and the love of family pets. In all numbers, we are at 888-967-2825. Later in the hour, we'll meet up with a woman who actually heads up a pet loss support group in Charlottesville, Virginia. But we begin with a psychologist and a veterinarian. Sarah Salmon is the owner and medical director of a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-per-week emergency animal hospital located in northern Albemarle County. Craig Sheely is a professor of graduate psychology at James Madison University, a counselor in private practice, as well as executive director of an institute that promotes cultural understanding around the world. Dr. Sheely, Dr. Salmon, thank you so very much for making time for us.
Nice to be here.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
Well, Sarah, as long as I butchered your name to begin with, Dr. Salmon, let's go to you first. Tell me about people's relationships with their pets.
People have vastly different relationships with their pets, and I think everything from the farm animals on the farm to the close house pets that they have. So I think some people depend innately on those pets for their social interactions and enjoyments, and for other people, you know, farm animals can be a commodity and a source of revenue, and they are going to view those those relationships are very different.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been my experience too in working with folks who've lost pets. One of the more fascinating aspects of it for me is just how amazingly different human beings are in their reaction or to pets. As well as their reaction about the loss of a pet, and then the reasons why I find really interesting. In other words, their own life histories, what a pet means to them in their life, in the context for themselves, for their relationships. All of those life history factors tend to influence how people, the relationships people have with their pets in life and in death. It's very interesting.
I've certainly seen within the practice that there's a lot more close relationships with pets, and when a family member dies themselves, those pets are that often then come to a new family, a new aspect of the family, and therefore that relationship changes for the animal, but also when that animal then passes, it is a reminder of the original owner who has also passed. And that can be it can be doubly difficult, I think, for those families who have now inherited grandma's or mom's dog, and mom's dog was old and mom was old, and we've had to say goodbye to mom, and now we have to say goodbye to her dog.
This is the kind of topic dealing with the loss of a pet that can be hard to discuss. And there may be some people listening who have a particular question that they'd like a chance to ask, or a story that they'd really like to share. that they're a little hesitant to pick up the phone and call us. If you've just joined us, that number is 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. But it occurs to me that what we're talking about in terms of relationship with a pet or pets is often easier if we talk about it or talk about at least some of it in story. So let me ask you some of your stories, Dr. Sarah Salmon. You've had lots of pets in your life.
Yes, I have.
Tell me about some of the earliest.
My first dog, the dog I grew up with, came with me from Virginia to Michigan.
You were born in Lynchburg.
I was born in Lynchburg.
And then your family moved to Grosse Pointe, Michigan?
That's correct. And we brought our beagle, our Virginia beagle, up to Michigan with us. And she lived a good long life. And
what was her name?
Mandy. And my family was preparing to take a trip to Colorado. And she had become old, and we had to euthanize her right before we left for that trip. And for the first day driving out there, scarcely a word in the car with the five of us. And then my father made a joke about Mandy's bowel movements and kind of broke the ice. And then it kind of got us through to laughing about some of the silly things that Mandy did in her life and some of the silly pictures we have of her. And I still have one on my fridge.
So Mandy was in your life up until you were what age?
She 15. I was 15.
So from birth to 15. So
she came along right about the time I did.
As you think about her now, are there any particular stories that spring to mind?
I think I have plenty of silly stories about her. I think that she was my first generation, and now I'm on my fourth generation of dogs and dog friends in my life. And so I think my mind fills with lots of stories about silly things my pets have done along the way.
Can you pick one?
Give me a second to think of one. Do you have one about one of your family pets?
Oh, Lord. a silly story. I mean, they're just kind of ridiculous creatures all around, you know.
Yes.
Kind of their existence is a silly thing and an endless source of amusement for us. So,
I had a deaf Dalmatian for her entire life, and she would smile. And she would only smile when she was very happy or when she had done something very bad. And so whenever I came home, I knew. Because when I should be at the front door smiling.
Getting your good graces.
That's right. And the other thing that she did, the other time she smiled was when she saw people she hadn't seen in a while. You know, her inner circle of people she loved. And her circle was a little small, but she never forgot her inner circle, and that also made her smile. Mm. And that made us all smile, because she looked completely silly when she smiled.
Well, word is that when you were growing up, you had a very understanding mother, Sarah Salmon, because I think I've heard you say in the past that you had turtles and rabbits and dogs and a horse and rats.
Yes.
And you probably have stories about all of them.
I absolutely do. It was a coup on my side for the rats. My mother, being a Southern lady from Lynchburg, Virginia, would never allow a rat in her house. But she met the little guy and thought he was adorable, except for his tail. And, actually really even my father grew to love that little guy. And, he learned how to move the top of his cage if I didn't keep an encyclopedia on it. And he would go find the people in the house immediately. You know, he wanted to be with the people. So there's a story of Nonsense was the rat's name. One night when I was at a slumber party, my parents had gone to bed and Nonsense decided it was time for a midnight run around the house and went right to their bed, jumped in it, went right down to my dad's feet. And little Nonsense was lucky to live through the rest of that night.
Veterinarian Sarah Salmon has specialized in emergency medical care for animals for more than 15 years. Today, she owns and oversees operation at the VETSS or Vets Animal Hospital on Airport Road, north of Charlottesville. Psychologist Craig Shealy still does some work as a clinical therapist, squeezing that in between his roles as director of the International Beliefs and Values Institute, based at Mary Baldwin College, as well as professor of graduate psychology at James Madison University. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. Our topic today, dealing with the loss of a family pet. So if you have a story about a particular pet that you'd be willing to share, how you dealt with its loss, if you have questions for our guests, we'd love to hear from you at 888-967-2825. Let's go next to Dayton. Kathleen, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
I am a house call vet here in Rockingham County, and my job does entail a lot of home euthanasias. That it's kind of a strange thing that I get complimented on my ability to put an animal down, which you don't think about in vet school. You think about how you're going to help animals. But one of the things that I've learned through the years is basically you've got to be a counselor when you walk into a situation like that, and how you help each individual family deal with the grief of losing such a beloved pet. And it's just over the years, most of my compliments have not been on saving an animal from a diabetic crisis or hit by a car. It's you were so kind and gentle when you took care of our pet at the very end. And I think that does help a lot with the owners to deal with the loss of that pet, is how the vet handles it and approaches it.
I agree with you. I think the human side of working with people as they have to make a difficult decision and holding their hand or similar, as the case may be, so that they can be okay with the fact that they just made a difficult decision and that their critter's not going to come home with them.
Yeah, and the other thing is the guilt that they are playing God and that they're killing their animal, and it's just it's something that you have to tell them that, no, it's a gift when you are able to release them from the pain and the suffering, and that, no, you're not murdering them.
Yeah. I think the decision to end another creature's life is a very difficult one, and I agree that veterinarians are counselors in helping owners make these decisions. And I tell pet owners every day, you know, I support you. I'm here to help you understand what's happening with your pet and why we are at this place where this decision is an appropriate one.
Yep.
And I think they care a lot what we think as veterinarians. Do we agree with their decision?
Yep.
And
yep.
I think they need our support to get through that.
Kathleen, is there a question that you most often get from your clients?
Am I doing the right thing? What is this for your pet? What would you do? And those are things that I can't tell an owner. I said, what I want to do is different than what you want to do. It doesn't make one more right than the other. It's what's right for you, the pet, and the situation that everybody's in.
I also get that decision or that question frequently, mm-hmm. and I try to answer honestly. You know, mm-hmm. I will tell you what I would do in my situation, mm-hmm. but this is your situation, and I support you in your decision for your pet.
Yep, because they're already going through enough guilt as it is that they don't want somebody else making them feel like they're not doing enough.
Kathleen, thanks so much for sharing some of your perspective with us.
You're welcome.
Our guest today on Virginia Insight, Craig Shealy, clinical psychologist and executive director of the International Beliefs and Values Institute, as well as Sarah Salmon, veterinarian and medical director of the Vets Emergency Animal Hospital, located just north of Charlottesville. In a few moments, we're going to meet somebody who actually heads up a pet loss support group. We have to pause for a break. We also have Thaddeus on the phone line with us. So we'll probably get Thaddeus's call in first, and then we'll go to the pet loss supporter, pet loss facilitator. I'm sorry, sad subject. I can't talk, but we will try to talk more in about a minute. Still here in the studio with me, psychologist Craig Sheely and veterinarian Sarah Salmon, as we take a look at the topic of dealing with the loss of a family pet. Next to Harrisonburg, Thaddeus, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
This is just a comment about my pet loss. When I was a kid, I had a cat. It was an orange tabby named Casey, and he was run over by a tractor. And I had just started to begin to bond with that cat. And when this happened, I was at school, and I didn't know that it had happened until I came home. And I cried for 2 or 3 days, and my parents helped me get through that. And another thing that helped me get through that was having other animals and other cats and dogs.
Thaddeus, I'm curious, how old are you now?
I'm 12.
And you said this happened when you were a kid. How old were you when your cat died?
I think I was about 6 or 7, because I had just started first or second grade.
Did your family have a kind of a funeral or a burial service for the cat? Did you all get together and say goodbye?
No, because he was in a cornfield and it got up through the chopper, so we couldn't find the remains.
That's very sad.
I'm sorry to hear that, Thaddeus.
Thaddeus, what was your cat's name?
Casey.
Casey?
Casey.
And what do you remember most about him?
That he used to, like, claw at me and kind of claw up my shirt.
Like kneading a blanket or like that sort of clawing?
I'm sorry, what?
Affectionate clawing that we call kneading, where they'll move their front paws back and forth and kind of paw and purr like kittens do.
Sometimes, but sometimes I guess you get annoyed with him scratching
you. He gets crabby with you.
So he would start clawing at me.
So, Thaddeus, it sounded like you have other pets, other animals in your life now?
Yes, I have 2 other cats. They're not my original ones, but they're tabbies.
Well, it sounds like you're very grown up now since you had this experience when you were 5 or 6, but you probably know other youngsters, people your own age, people who are younger than you who have pets. If someone in that age group ever had a cat or dog die, do you have any idea what you would say to them or what kind of advice you might give them?
I would say just, like, talk to your parents about it and just kind of learn to let it go.
Thaddeus, thank you so very much for taking time to call us.
You're welcome.
We're talking about dealing with the loss of a pet here on this edition of Virginia Insight. We have a clinical psychologist and a veterinarian with us. And now joining us by phone is a licensed clinical social worker who in her spare time runs a Charlottesville-based pet loss support group. Marguerite David, thank you for making time for us.
My pleasure.
Well, I understand, Marguerite, that you were sort of talked into taking over as a facilitator of this support group when you first moved to Charlottesville more than 10 years ago. And maybe we can get into that story a bit in a moment. But first, why a support group for people who've lost a pet? Is it really that big a deal?
Absolutely. I work with a lot of people for whom their animal is a major source of love and support in their life, seniors, and even people in couples and families sometimes, because our connection to our animals is so individual that usually there's one person in the family they connect to the most. And so those are the people who find me and come to tell their stories.
And what kind of stories do they tell you?
Well, what I do the most is listen. And the first thing is for them to be able to say what happened. That's a really important part of the story, which is in current time. Sometimes they're coming when they're in the middle of making medical decisions. You know, do I have one more surgery? What do we do? And while I never tell people what to do, I listen and I honor and I validate, and that they can really make the right decision for them, which was alluded to earlier in your program. And I listen to them talk about their relationship, because sometimes I'm a safe person where they can go and really be heard about their relationship. And they asked me, they said, you know, I didn't cry this much when my mother died. Is there something wrong with me? And I'm like, no. Did your mother give you unconditional love? And they're like, no. But your pet does. Your pet loves you unconditionally, day in and day out. You know, that's really special.
Does your group meet or... is there a central meeting time and place for the group, or is it online, or how do you run it?
When I first learned about the group, there was, and what I found, maybe because I am a counselor, I found that I wanted to be more flexible than having a certain, you know, Wednesday night at 6 o'clock kind of thing, because I've also found that people give themselves a very short window of time to do the grief work around their pet. So I try to see people within 24, 48 hours. And so,
Marguerite, David, tell us more about that. That short window of time where they allow themselves to grieve is what you just said?
Yes, yes. There's a lot of pressure, so to speak, from family and well-intentioned friends sometime. You know, it was talked about earlier. Well, that's just a dog. Let's go get you another one.
Or, it seems like there's, you know, a social taboo to grieving too much or grieving too long.
Absolutely. There is in our society in general, and then it's even more around our animals. So it's really important that they find somebody that they can talk to who will really listen. And it does start with their veterinarian and being heard there, and good decisions, and just that extra moral support and emotional support that so many veterinarians now do. And then a lot of times they just need to tell their story over and over and over again, and they need to be heard. And then that's part of the grieving process, and then they will proceed at their own rate through that grieving process.
Do you encourage them? I know I do. Encourage them to find some of their favorite photos with that pet and remember some of the best moments that they've shared with their pet.
Absolutely.
And to talk about those as well.
Yes.
And I think, yes, all veterinarians do have this function to help owners and to listen. Yeah. I listen. My staff listens.
Yeah. I always ask people to bring a photograph when they come to see me, and that helps me also key into the animal, and I get a sense of the animal from looking at the photograph.
Yeah, that piece that you just mentioned about people giving themselves a very short window to grieve, it's interesting, and listeners might be interested to know that phenomenon of not allowing oneself to grieve has a name. It's called disenfranchised grief. And these are aspects of grief these are grief moments or processes that are not endorsed as being worthy of grief by society. And pet loss is an example of that.
Craig, I understand from talking to you previously that there are several factors to that, so I want to give you room to expand more on that in a few moments, but we are getting some other calls in now here on Virginia Insight, where our topic today is dealing with the loss of a family pet. And if you've just joined us, our phone number is 888-967-2825, but let's make room for some of these calls. Let's go next to Charlottesville. Aaron, thanks for joining in. Your question or comment, please.
Hi. I had a dog. I had her since I was 8, and she lived to be 14, so she helped me through, you know, all the teenage years and all the stuff that you have to deal with growing up. She died in November of 2012, and as a way of trying to deal with my grief was, first of all, when I grieve, I don't like to have people, you know, clawing at me or, you know, always checking in on me, and unfortunately, my friends weren't very supportive of my grief. They thought I was being selfish by wanting to be alone. So one of the ways that I tried to manage my grief was by building her a garden around where she's buried. And so when I tend to my garden, and it's a flower garden, when I tend to my garden, it helped me to sort of get over or work through missing her and, you know, cultivating something as a result of her loss.
I wonder why it is you think that people, when they felt that you were being selfish about wanting to be alone, what was your reaction to that? I mean, did you feel frustration, or was it, how did you deal with the fact that that was the response you got?
I was very upset. Mm-hmm. These friends I had known for a very long time. And sometimes, you know, they're the way that they deal with grief is by surrounding themselves with, you know, people and sort of working through it like that. But, you know, sometimes when it's especially around grief, people don't always understand, even if you've known them for quite a while, that, you know, each person deals with grief. And my way of dealing with it is space and time and, you know, working through the memories. And, you know, when I wake up, she's not going to be there anymore. But, you know, even now, I can feel it, you know, it's still fairly fresh. Unfortunately, I had to sort of quickly bottle it up because I wasn't given a lot of time, but, you know, working on my roses or, you know, even digging weeds is therapeutic in a sense.
Yeah, that's a beautiful example, you know, of doing something physical too that sometimes is helpful to people, and you can visit your garden, and every time you're working in it, you'll connect again. And this is just a beautiful story of what you did for yourself. And underlying your story to me is you trusted your instincts, and that's really important that people trust what they need to do for themselves because they know.
Erin, thank you so much for sharing that experience with us.
All right, thank you.
888-WMRA-TALK, the easy way to remember our phone number. In all numbers, 888-967-2825. Dealing with the topic of how to deal with the loss of a family pet. And our guests here to help on Virginia Insight, Craig Shealy, clinical psychologist and executive director of the International Beliefs and Values Institute. Sarah Salmon, veterinarian and medical director of the Vets Emergency Animal Hospital, located just north of Charlottesville. Plus, by phone, licensed clinical social worker, Marguerite David. Ms. David, only going to be with us for a few more minutes, so if you particularly want to talk to her, do call us in, right? Do call in for us right now. Marguerite, people deal, as Erin was just showing us, with grief in different ways. But it sounds like one of the messages that you try to get across with the people that you see as part of the Charlottesville Pet Loss Support Group is that you have a right to your grief, however feels right for you to deal with it.
Yes, that's very well put. I mean, that is the reason that I got into this work, was to really tell people that and give them a space to experience that. And it's been it's extremely gratifying work because what happens, too, is that when we have one loss, when we've had that unconditional love for our pet for years or even a short period of time, then when we have that loss, it triggers our memory of other losses because grief is a cumulative process. And so then they often want to talk about something that happened in their childhood or something else that is a loss that hasn't been fully grieved. And fully being able to grieve your loss is a beautiful thing. It opens your heart and it sets you free. It's a beautiful thing when people get there. And I just honor wherever people are and at the pace they want to go. And as we talked about in our, you know, quick society, you got to move on, move on, keep going. And so I really just wanted to create a place where people could tell their stories and experience the grief the way that they need to.
Going next to Augusta County, Bill, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
Yes, hi. About a year and a half ago, a cat that had been dumped, I live at a farm and occasionally people just dump animals, who was pregnant and had kittens and ended up living here, you know, sort of as a semi-feral cat for many years, came to me one afternoon and said goodbye. It was clear it was going to be our last meeting, and with cats, you know, that live outdoors, you almost never see a body. They go off by themselves somewhere and die. So she came and, you know, we said our goodbyes and had our parting, and it was a very, you know, bittersweet moment that, you know, it was our parting and she was going to die, but we had that goodbye.
Yeah, I certainly am aware that dogs will do that too.
Oh yes,
and certainly not just feral cats, but house cats.
Yeah,
you know, owners have shared many stories with me that they knew the time was coming because they couldn't find the one pet, and they had to search and search and all that. So yes, yeah. I think sometimes they do. No.
Bill, how long ago did this experience take place?
It was about a year and a half ago.
It sounds to me, just from listening to your voice, like this was a powerful experience of honoring and connection that's still with you today.
It is. I'm actually surprised at how deeply I feel it now.
Yeah, I think that's, I really appreciate you sharing that and in the way that you're sharing it, because I think it's hard to talk about these things in a verbal way, because it tends to get us out of touch with the depth of connection that is really possible for us with animals.
And it definitely does.
Yeah. And I think you remind us of kind of the core, the power of relationships with our pets, and in many ways that phenomenon isn't fundamentally different from the relationships that we can have with other human beings, which is probably one of the deep misconceptions out there that leads to a lot of confusion when people are grieving about their animals, that, well, animals you're not supposed to have feelings of this depth or nature.
That's a truism for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that.
I feel like there are more pet owners who are closer to their pets now and more dependent on them.
We're
for
about
that
to hit a break, so pause on that for me. Let me thank Bill. And Marguerite, you're about to leave us, so we've got 20 seconds for a final thought or point you'd like to make.
How about how to contact you?
That's going to be on our webpage.
Oh, you have it. Okay, great.
Marguerite, are you still there?
I'm still here, yes.
Final thought about dealing with the loss of a pet?
Well, just to honor where you are and find someone you can talk to who will listen without giving you advice or rushing you along. Find someone who will listen with an open heart.
Marguerite, thanks so much for making time for us here on Virginia Insight.
My pleasure.
We're going to continue looking at this topic of dealing with the loss of a family pet after we pause for about 1 minute. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Still here in studio with me, psychologist Craig Shealy and veterinarian Sarah Salmon, as we take a look at dealing with the loss of a family pet. Next, to Verona. Terry, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Yeah, I have a comment. I mean, I know a lot of people who have lost a dog, and then you say, well, do you think you'll ever have another? And they'll say no. But they attribute that to the closeness with the dog. Well, I don't quite buy that, because I've had dogs all my life, and they don't live as long as I do. And so therefore, for example, the last one I've lost was Golden Retriever, traveled with me about 700,000 miles throughout the country when I transported horses through both every province in Canada and every one of the lower 48 states. So we spent 24 hours a day together. And when I lost him, it was quite a deal. But there was no question in my mind that there would be another golden retriever coming into my life within probably 2 weeks. I was at a breeder and looking at golden puppies, knowing I'd never have that guy again.
Well, I think acknowledging that we do all grieve differently, I think for some people, they remember the pain of the loss of the pet, and that's what they don't want to face again. And for lots of us, like myself included, I surround myself with the animals that I enjoy and love, and I couldn't dream of my life without them.
Mm-hmm. Terry, thank you so much for sharing that perspective with us.
All right, thank you. Bye bye.
Craig Sheely, disenfranchised grief.
Yeah.
Tell us more about that. Is one of the aspects, by the way, that sometimes we think certain types of people don't need to grieve, like children.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm actually drawing this upon a colleague in Texas by the name of Millie Cordaro, and she talks about the fact that disenfranchised grief really occurs for three reasons, that grief is either not recognized by society as being something that's worthy of grief, or it could be that the person is not recognized as capable of grieving like a child, or that death that occurs isn't considered a genuine loss. So when you think about pets, and there are other forms of disenfranchised grief, by the way, grief over a miscarriage, grief over the ending, believe it or not, of an extramarital affair, or grief over the loss of a job. So these are aspects of the human condition of grieving, which is inevitable for all of us. We are all either going to have an experience of grief in our life, or we are going to struggle with the degree to which we allow ourselves to have that experience. But part of being alive is experiencing death. And pets are as you're hearing from folks, pets are a very powerful source of that reality of our existence. And it should be honored, should be taken seriously.
I think it's critical that children have a positive grief experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not uncommon that the loss of a family pet is their first form of significant grief.
Yeah.
And parents being willing to listen and to let them cry and to cry themselves,
yep,
and do it as a family, and you know, teaching children how to grieve,
yeah,
and that it's acceptable to do.
And it's a powerful lesson that they will carry with them the rest of their lives. So how you as a parent deal with your child's grief and your grief tells them something about the nature of grief and what are the parameters for that. So if you can fully allow yourself to feel whatever it is that you feel, and appropriately, of course, but let the child know that you're having this experience too, you're teaching them something about how we human beings are built that will help them throughout their lives.
Well, and Mother Nature is a cycle.
Yes,
life
indeed.
And death occur simultaneously all the time.
All the time.
And I think that is equally critical for children to understand.
And related to that also is that we humans aren't the only ones who grieve. You know,
right,
that our animals grieve when their friends, other pets, grieve as well. And that's documented. That's not an anecdotal kind of Disney-esque frame. There's actual evidence of people who've watched animals in the wild, elephants, for example, sort of hovering over, rubbing up against a lost a mate, monkeys, other creatures. Our cat went through a definite grief process when we had to euthanize another cat. And that our cat went just nutty, peeing all over the place, doing all kinds of crazy things. And it took us, he's now on cat meds, actually, which among other things we did in terms of just taking care of him and giving him extra time and whatever. He now is past that, but it took months for old Biscuit to get over the loss of Jelly. So,
yes, I think that some animals, they're as varied as we are.
Yes, they are.
Some of them grieve heartily and for a long time,
yeah.
and others not.
Yeah,
just like us.
That's another thing that some people to be aware of, and we were talking about that earlier. That people vary massively in their experiences to grief, and so the main thing I think is to pay attention to that variability, and also to recognize that the way we grieve comes no small part from the life histories that we've had. So, and the role that pets play in our lives. That for some of us, our pets are absolutely central. They're more important to us than other human relationships even. That doesn't have to be a bad thing, but it could be something that's worth understanding as well. So just taking into account all that complexity is a really important part of the process.
VETSS stands for Veterinary Emergency Service and Specialty, a 24-hour-a-day animal hospital located in northern Albemarle County. Dr. Sarah Salmon is the owner and medical director of that facility. Dr. Craig Sheely is both director of the International Beliefs and Values Institute based at Mary Baldwin College, as well as professor of graduate psychology at James Madison University. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We've got just a couple more minutes to fit in any additional calls on the topic of dealing with the loss of a family pet. So if you'd like to call us, please do right now at 888-WMRA. Talk. Next to Harrisonburg, Andy, thanks for joining in. Your question or comment, please.
Yeah, it's more of a comment than a question, but before I get to it, I'd like to start a Thaddeus fan club. for that.
I think all of us here would join that.
Yeah.
Well, I wish I had it together at 12 like that young fella. The comment I was going to make kind of gets right to what Dr. Sheely was just talking about. I was part of a group that produced a whole series of videos on grieving in the mid-90s when it was still VHS tapes that we used. And the premise of the series was called You're Not Alone. And it was a lot of interviews of people grieving whom we found through hospice. And we did a whole series dealing, you know, You're Not Alone, dealing with the death of a spouse, of a child. And we did one for pets. And they were sold through catalogs. And very interestingly, the death of a pet video outsold the other ones remarkably.
Is this Andy Perrine by any chance?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Andy, how you doing?
Fine, how are you?
Good. I'll have to check out that video.
Andy, it sounds a little bit like what you're saying. They relate to our previous guest, Marguerite David, was talking about when people come to her support group and say, I never cried this much with the loss of a parent. And she says, well, did your parent love you continuously, unconditionally for all of their life? It sounds like there's a point taken there with how at least some of us feel connected to a pet.
Yeah, it was remarkable. And, you know, I did all the interviews of the people grieving in the videos. And it was almost more viscerally obvious about the pain that the grievers were feeling about their pet than it was about their human relations. And it may be that unconditional love or the innocence, that could be part of it.
Yeah, we humans have wonderful ways of protecting ourselves from letting others know what's really going on inside us. Whereas pets afford us the opportunity for that unconditional, non-masked, non-hidden kind of expression of affection and care for us, which is perhaps one of the reasons they're so powerful to us.
Andy, thanks so much for your call. I want to apologize to Melanie, who's posted to us on Facebook. Melanie, my computer screen is frozen, so I can only see the first couple of lines of your post, but let me read that much. She says, I was wondering if your guests have an opinion on this dilemma. When you have two pets and have to put one down, is it better to have the sibling present during the procedure? I think it's important for the sibling to at least see the body. And Melanie, I'm sorry, I can't see the rest of what you wrote, but if you want to respond to that much.
Melanie, I certainly think that animals innately know the smell of death. And I think if it's possible to have siblings, I don't know, it's just sibling animals, but close animals. They don't. It can be a cat and a dog,
yeah,
that share the same house or who are bonded to each other. I do think that some animals and will search if they don't know what's happened and their friend just disappears. And so I personally believe that, that when that's possible, it is a kindness and maybe fills in the gap for the other pet. I'm not certain if it helps with the grieving process or changes it, but at least I think they're not likely to search.
Hmm. Dr. Sarah Salmon, earlier you started to say something related to how much more connected some people are to their pets today than in years past, and we had to cut you short at that point. Can you get back to that a little bit now?
Sure. I think it's so varied, but some people rely completely on that pet for all their social interaction, and some people have very distant not close relationships. For instance, pets who live outside, and I don't think that entirely translates to how they will grieve when that pet is one day gone.
But you see a connection to technology,
sure,
and workspace and connection to pets today.
With more and more people not necessarily spending 40 hours a week in an office space, working at home, working online, where their pet is with them constantly, it's not a big stretch that relationship would be very, very close.
Yeah, I think that.
And also that maybe people are spending less time with other people.
Yeah. Yeah. From that perspective, you know, the needs that pets fulfill are no different at one level, or at least at several levels, than the needs that humans fill for one another. And so the fact that we are in such a technological age and so fast paced and so forth means that pets increasingly sort of perhaps fit that kind of a lifestyle so that they compensate for, I'm not claiming this is reality, but just a thought, a theory that perhaps pets are filling the need for us to get needs met at maybe an unprecedented level.
We'd also talked a little bit about the fact that the core family isn't necessarily as localized as it once was, where, you know, many families stayed in the same city and knew were close with their relatives, and now that seems so less common. People are farther away from their families and may have other relationships filling that void, so to speak.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to look at, has pet ownership, is there a correlation really between pet ownership and some of these social changes to see if the, you know, the elevation in pet ownership is associated with, I don't know if that's causal or correlational, but yeah,
families.
Exactly. It's a really interesting idea.
In the short time we have left, Dr. Sarah Salmon, veterinarian, give me the bullet points about what you would most like people to know or think about when it comes to dealing with the loss of a family pet.
I would like for them to know that it's okay to grieve, and it's part of healing is being able to acknowledge what you feel, to acknowledge your sadness. And if you have someone in your life that you can share that with, then do. If not, find a healthy way to release that sadness. You will sleep better and grow better and be able to cherish your memories faster if you can healthfully go through the grief of having to say goodbye. We all acknowledge that pets' lives are shorter than ours. And that reality isn't so apparent when they're cute little puppies.
And Craig Sheely, what about somebody who has a spouse or a family member or a dear friend, and they don't really understand why the grief is going on so long? Any advice for them?
Well, I think the degree to which people can, the earlier caller who felt such understandable frustration at her friends for not reacting in a way that was more empathic, and, you know, maybe one thing that comes out of our conversation here is that the reactions that people have to the act or the process of grieving is very complicated. And so being able to talk to other people about the fact that you're having this grief experience and just your desire to have that honored, to let you go through that, would be to speak for yourself, to advocate for the fact that you can grieve, which means that you're living, that you're human.
Our guests have been Dr. Sarah Salmon, Medical Director of the Veterinary Emergency Service and Specialty, or VETS Center, in Northern Albemarle, as well as Dr. Craig Shealy, Professor of Graduate Psychology at James Madison University and Executive Director of the International Beliefs and Values Institute. Plus, earlier in the hour, Marguerite David, Facilitator for the Charlottesville Pet Loss Support Group. Thank you all for making time for us.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
You can find postings of Virginia Insight on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. And when you get to the page for today's broadcast, you'll find links to more information about all of our guests and the work they are doing. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.